Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and it's pretty rare when this happens, but today, there is somewhere I would rather be. And I'm not referring to the surreal heat here in New York. I mean, Dante's Third Circle of Hell would be a refreshing change from that. But that's not what I'm talking about, because today is opening day of the 150th year of horse racing at Saratoga, which attracts most of the country's finest thoroughbreds, trainers, jockeys, and me. I go there every year. It's one of my favorite places on the planet. And today, with Saratoga marking its 150th season, it got me to thinking about what American music sounded like 150 years ago. There were no records, obviously. If you were a musician, you made a living by playing live. Songs were made popular by traveling musicians. Sound familiar, musicians of 2013? If I had a nickel for every guest who talked about musicians having to make their living these days from touring rather than album sales, well, I'd have a lot of nickels, which is more than you folks make from Spotify. Still, it wasn't that long ago that a young, unknown group could unleash a brand new sound, score a top 20 single, and make a living from selling records. 20 years ago, in the summer of 1993, one such band was the jazz-based hip-hop group Diggable Planets. The essence while the decadence is hidden. When people act like people, the theory isn't pigeon. If you know the norm, it's like Hades transformed. We'll speak with Ishmael Butler, co-founder of Diggable Planets, in the conclusion of our week-long look at music from the summer of 1993. Then we'll be jolted back to the present by the Turkish-Canadian band Minor Empire. They'll talk about the recent unrest in Turkey and play some music that mixes rock, electronica, and Turkish music. But let's begin, in that summer of 93, with the sound of the movies. Yes, the summer of 93 was the summer of Jurassic Park. I remember John Williams' score being so loud in the theater that I swear you could have heard it outside. But apparently, other sounds were audible in the theaters that summer, and joining me here now with some of them are Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcasts. Guys, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Hi. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Where were you guys? Rafer, where were you in 1993?
1993, I was in San Francisco. A great time to be in San Francisco, young and poor. I was living, I was living in an abandoned laundromat in the Mission back then. So that's
nice.
That's what I remember about 93.
Seeing a lot of movies?
Seeing a lot of, well, when I could. I wasn't making much money, but so I was seeing some movies.
Did you get a lot of your music from movies back then, or was it more like whatever was on the radio? And...
Well, I was trying at the time to kind of start my fledgling journalism career, so I was getting some free records here and there, mostly what I could scrounge together by selling other free records I'd already gotten. So the pickings were slim for me back then, but I did what I could.
Kristen?
I was living in Minneapolis. I was still a teenager, and it was a great time to be part of the Minneapolis music scene. I saw tons of shows, saw shows several times a week, and also saw tons of movies. I probably went to the movies 3 times a week back then.
So I Married an Axe Murderer is one of those movies that seems to have stayed with you.
Oh, absolutely. So I Married an Axe Murderer, I must point out, was a complete flop. It was critically trashed. But the album, the soundtrack, a lot of people know because it kind of defined 1993 indie pop music, much like the single soundtrack the year before really had the grunge and it defined a certain era. So I Married an Axe Murderer was really all the bands that my friends and I loved, everything from Toad the Wet Sprocket to The Laws, The Boo Radleys, Suede, all of this music that really to me says 1993.
Including 2 different versions of There She Goes Again by 2 of the bands you just mentioned, The Boo Radleys.
Yes, and The Laws.
This is the latter of those bands, The Laws with There She Goes Again from the soundtrack to So I Married an Axe Murderer. That is The Laws with their version of There She Goes. There's a version by the Boo Radleys on this same record, the soundtrack to the film So I Married an Axe Murderer. Kristen, this was a Mike Myers vehicle.
Yes, Mike Myers around his the peak of his fame, around the Wayne's World era. And this is a romantic comedy slash horror movie. Like the title says, he thinks he's married an axe murderer. The title pretty much says the whole thing right there. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to see the movie, but the soundtrack is really just sweet and will take you straight back to 1993. And I must do a shout out to Minneapolis also. It has one of our famous Minneapolis bands, Soul Asylum, on it as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, it also has one of your favorite movie moments. I'll say songs in quotes.
Yes, that's right. In this movie, Mike Myers is a beat poet, a struggling beat poet trying to make it, who's always at poetry slams. And one of my favorite movie music poetry moments is in it. He performs something called This Poem Sucks, which I just love.
He wants you back, he screams into the night air like a fireman going for a window that has no fire. Accept the passion of his heart. I am lonely. It's really hard. This poem sucks.
That is, Kristen, it's a good thing you warned me off seeing this movie, because listening to that, I was ready to run right out and rent the thing. That's great stuff. So I Married an Axe Murderer, Mike Myers, a failing beat poet for reasons that are all too apparent in that clip. Rafer, what do you got to counter that from the summer of 93?
Well, do you want to talk about Judgment Night?
I'd rather not, but I assume you want to, so let's go ahead.
All right, listen, I know that this is sort of the enfant terrible of rock soundtracks. Everyone points to this soundtrack as being the I guess it depends on your taste, the zenith or the nadir of rap rock.
But people point to it without ever pointing to the film.
Well, it has nothing to do with the film, really. The film is one of these guys go out for a night, you know, on the town and wind up witnessing a murder and running from drug dealers. It's Cuba Gooding Jr. and Emilio Estevez and I think Jeremy Piven. Nothing really to do with the movie at all.
Yeah.
And not a great film.
Did you see it, Kristen?
No, but I hate the soundtrack so much. And I think it might be because I have two X chromosomes. From what I understand, only men have what it takes to appreciate the soundtrack. It is painful and torturous. To me, it says, I'm in a hostage situation and I better let the hostages go because this music is being blasted into the windows right now. I hate the soundtrack so
much. I'm not saying to you that I am a rap rock fan. But when you think about it, this movie was really the soundtrack was really quite ahead of its time. I mean, years later, you'd have people like DJ Z Trip mixing up rap and rock. You'd have Danger Mouse, right, mixing up Jay-Z and the Beatles, Girl
Limp,
Talk.
Limp Bizkit.
Right, and Limp Bizkit, all those guys, Papa Roach, Incubus. I mean, the list goes
this
on.
This may even be before Cypress Hill did that song with the guitarist from Rancid. What's your name?
I know who you're talking about,
yeah.
But yeah.
So they're ahead of their time, but hilariously so.
But hilariously so, yes. And Cypress Hill does have a track on here with Sonic Youth, of all people, which sounded interesting, sort of LSD meets marijuana. Didn't quite work out that way, but, you know, still.
What about, you've chosen for us Sir Mix-a-Lot and Mudhoney.
Indeed, Freak Mama.
I don't know what to say. This is from the album to the movie Judgment Night.
Mac is back, sweeping up snack packs, still slinging that game on a rock track. Been in this bank and it don't stop, no. Here we go again, setting up shop. Yep. Looking for a bang with a nice hip. Gotta have a set of them thick lips. When it comes to sex, I want a freak, no leaks with a baby got back teeth. It's on, partner, get it on tape, son. Here I come with another one. I want to put you in the mud, honey. Spitting out of them guts like it ain't funny. Yep, Peter Piper couldn't pimp. Call Max if you want to peep gang simp. Freak daddy, want to get nasty, call Freak Mama fast. G.
Kristen, you're not laughing. The rest of us are having a great time here.
I'm being tortured over here. I'm being tortured. When is it going to be shut off? When will you stop this? It's just so painful.
We didn't even get to the part where Sir Mix-a-Lot says, I think I just lost my street credibility, y'all.
Yes, Sir
Mix-a-Lot and Mudhoney and Freak Mama from the soundtrack to the film Judgment Night. I have not seen this film either. The soundtrack does not make me want to run out and rent it. But nor does it make me feel like I'm in a hostage situation, Kristen. I mean, it is kind of...
It's awful. But there's nothing good about this.
Was this B-movie awful, or was this just intending to be progressive and ahead of their time and falling flat on their faces?
I think they were just trying to kind of capitalize on a trend and perhaps, you know, put a snazzy, interesting soundtrack onto a movie that was clearly not going to do that well.
Yeah. All right, we're talking about, as we have all week on Soundcheck, the summer of 93, the music, and in this case, the music from the movies. So, Kristen, if Judgment Night didn't do it for you, what movie did?
Let's get a little bit more sincere here. Let's get a little bit more regal and talk about some rock royalty. Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? Her soundtrack for that movie's fantastic. For all of the songs, it's a biopic based on I, Tina, which I have to point out is the autobiography she wrote with Kurt Loder of MTV fame.
Yeah,
he was the anchor for MTV News. And this movie tells the story of how she rises up from a poor girl in Tennessee to becoming a rock superstar and all those struggling years in between when she and Ike were together, and Ike was just an abusive, awful, controlling, and also very successful business partner. And so in the movie, Lawrence Fishburne plays Ike, Angela Bassett plays Tina Turner, and Tina Turner re-recorded most of the songs for this movie, and Lawrence Fishburne actually does his own singing in it.
Really?
Yeah.
And how is he?
He's pretty good. I mean, obviously, no one's as good as Tina in this movie. Tina's fantastic in it. And she recorded a song that plays during the closing credits, I Don't Want to Fight, which was originally offered to Sade to sing, but she turned it down, and it ended up in this film instead, and it's just a perfect way to conclude the movie.
This is Tina Turner, I Don't Want to Fight, from the film What's Love Got to Do with It? Tina Turner, I Don't Want to Fight, from the soundtrack to the movie What's Love Got to Do with It? Was this a hit in 93?
Yes, it was a huge hit, and this is Tina Turner's last major charting hit, actually, and that was many years ago. But I also have to point out that it was also a critical hit. Both Angela Bassett and Lawrence Fishburne got nominated for Oscars for Best Acting, and Angela Bassett actually got a Golden Globe for Best Actress for this movie as well. So it was really respected, and it was one of the top 20 movies of the summer as far as money is concerned, as far as how successful it was.
Well, and in terms of soundtrack, it's like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel, right? And you got Ike and Tina Turner songs to draw on.
Absolutely.
Even re-recorded.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman together co-host the Takeaways Movie Date podcast and are helping us wrap up our week-long survey of the summer of 93 by looking at some of the music that came from the movies that summer. Kristen, tell me about Poetic Justice.
Now, this came out at a time when Janet Jackson was at the top of her game. I don't know if you remember Janet Jackson, what she was doing in 93, but she was the top
paid artist
at the time.
Yeah.
Janet was out at that time, and she was just what the number one star, kind of the biggest thing there was in music at the time. And her song, Again, which appears on both the Janet album and on the Poetic Justice soundtrack, was nominated for awards. It was hugely successful. And this is really just a fantastic time in her career that I think we all really remember her and love her. This is when Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were very influential in her life. And this movie also stars Tupac, of course. And it is about a young woman named Justice who writes poetry, thus the title, Poetic Justice.
Janet Jackson with the song Again.
I heard from a friend today, and she said you were in town. Suddenly the memories came back to me in my mind. How can I be strong? I've asked myself time and time, I've said that I'll never. You had many, I know you did. I come from a place that hurt, and God knows how I cried. And I never want to return, never fall again.
Janet Jackson, Again. The song was on her number one hit record, but also, Kristen, from this film called Poetic Justice.
Are you crying? I can see you are really moved by this song.
I am so not moved by this.
Then I do have to point out
that I want to hear more of that Mudhoney Sir Mix-a-Lot
yes,
thing.
Exactly.
But I have to point out there are other big acts on this album. Obviously, Tupac's on it, and the introduction of a little
But you didn't
guy.
Play Tupac
but,
for
but,
us.
But there is this other guy that you may have heard of, and they were proudly introducing for the first time a man named Raymond Usher on the album as well. So it's a big album. A lot of big acts, TLC also on it. So you can laugh if you want to at Janet Jackson, or you can cry, or you can just enjoy all the other great acts on the album.
All right, let's move along. Rafer, Menace to Society.
Yes, the Hughes Brothers film about life in Watts in Los Angeles. Really one of the first, not the first, but definitely one of the first films, I think, to take a really hard, clear-eyed look at black youth in the inner cities, and to use a gangster rap soundtrack, which was really ascendant at the time, mm-hmm. And you know, really wound up being still a form of music that's still with us today. That really almost kind of defines rap these days.
And was it cleaned up for the film? I didn't see the movie. Did they kind of clean up the language, or it was just
no,
pretty
nothing,
raw?
Nothing's and cleaned up for the movie. There may be a cleaned up version of the soundtrack out there,
oh,
but I kind
I
of doubt it.
I certainly hope so, because we are about to hear MC8 doing Straight Up Menace from the soundtrack to Menace to Society.
It's got me in the state where I don't give a damn. Somebody help me, but nah, they don't hear me though. I guess I'll be another victim of the ghetto. Ain't no escaping cause I'm way too young. Pops is dealing, and on top of that, got mom sprung. Scheming off the top, pops never figured that he'd go down by the hands of another nigga. Now my pops is gone and
well, that was no clean-ish.
Ish, clean-ish, you know.
And that's as much of it as we can play. MC8 with Straight Up Menace from the soundtrack to the film Menace to Society. We've been speaking with Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer. They together co-host the Takeaways Movie Date podcast and have been remembering the sounds of the summer movies of 1993. Kristen, Rafer, great having you guys back with us on Soundcheck today. Let me read you guys an email that we got from Zeb in Brooklyn. In the summer of 93, I was 12 years old and remember spending a good portion of the school break painting my grandparents' decrepit farmhouse near the Adirondacks. I remember my grandmother buying the cassette, all in caps, the cassette, of the Last Action Hero soundtrack for me at Walmart. Do you guys remember Last Action Hero?
I loved that movie, but I don't remember the soundtrack.
So he listens to it nonstop all season and writes, I don't remember ever liking any of the bands on that tape, nor the actual movie. But for some reason, it really worked as a sort of vacation from my otherwise pretty solid adolescent taste in music. Oh, Alice in Chains was on it. I liked Alice in Chains, but
AC/DC? Yikes. All right, so I would say that's a mixed review of Last Action Hero. Kristen and Rafer, thank you guys for being with us.
Thank you so much for having
us
back.
And for Zeb, a little bit of AC/DC from The Last Action Hero. Speaking of movies in 1993, next week a new film called The To-Do List will hit theaters. It's a coming-of-age story starring Aubrey Plaza, who you might know from the TV show Parks and Recreation. Anyway, the film is set in the summer of 93, and they get all the details right, including the music. You can find out more by visiting soundcheck.org, where you can read our interview with The To-Do List's writer and director, Maggie Carey. Up next, Ishmael Butler of the hip-hop trio Diggable Planets and the more recent hip-hop collective known as Shabazz Palaces joins us to talk about the summer of 93 when Diggable Planets released their album Reachin', a new refutation of time and space. He's next on Soundcheck.
That's what I call action.
Looking out the window, watching all the people go, bugging off a funny vibe, cause now it seems they're equal. Wonder what would train say, wonder what my pop say, bugging off the calmness in the apple. Who me? I'm cooling in New York, I'm chilling in New York. The hoods is on my block, and the brothers at the court. The baseball hats is on, and the projects is calm.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. All this week, we've been talking about the music of the summer of 93, the chart toppers, the watershed moments, a few underdogs. Now we're going to hear from someone who spent that summer waiting. Waiting on the release of what would be a hit record. Ishmael Butler, founding member of the jazz-inspired hip-hop trio Diggable Planets, is on the line with us from Chicago. His group's debut album, Reachin', A New Refutation of Time and Space, came out in September at the end of the summer of 93, yielded a top 20 hit, was praised by critics as a rap milestone, and soon earned the group a Grammy. Ishmael Butler, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much. How you doing?
Good. So where were you that summer of 93?
I was in Brooklyn, New York. But we recorded the album in over in New Jersey. So I used to get on a train, go to Jersey. We made the album in Jersey City.
Mm-hmm. Now, the track we were just hearing, Pacifics, is subtitled New York is Red Hot, which this week is almost literally true here in New York with this heat wave. I looked it up 20 years ago. It was actually much, much cooler at this time in the summer of 93. But was New York, I mean, was it a particularly hot time to be a musician in Brooklyn?
I think that era in hip-hop was a pretty, pretty good era. I mean, it was so new, but yet had been around enough time to be established.
Right.
But there was still that kind of vibrant outlook to the music, you know, and it hadn't been as corporatized as it is now. So it was a good time to be making music and be in New York at that time, I think. Not that it isn't now, but it was just different.
Now, you were where? Were you in Fort Greene?
Yeah, we were in Fort Greene, Bed-Stuy, moving in, and we had a couple of places. We didn't really have our own place at the time, so everybody was moving to different people's houses and staying with friends and everything. But everything was in Fort Greene, Bed-Stuy area, yep.
Yep. And you were waiting for Reachin' to come out. Did you have any sense of what the response, any inkling of what was about to happen with that record?
No, not really. We were just happy to be making a record and putting it out. You know, mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. Anything beyond that was icing on the cake.
So, I mean, the sound really, you know, a lot of critics talked about it. And in fact, Rafer Guzman was just mentioning, you know, that this is a time when gangster rap was in the ascendancy. And you guys come along with something that's really kind of deeply rooted in numerous traditions, among them American jazz. Did you grow up with jazz in the house?
Yeah, my father, he loved jazz. You know, that was just kind of the first music I ever remember hearing.
You gotta do what you feel, do what you feel, do what you feel, yeah, do what you feel, do what you feel, do what you feel, do what you feel, yeah, do what you feel, do what you feel, do what you feel, do what you feel, yeah.
How hard was it to kind of draw a connection between, you know, that great African-American tradition of the early 20th century with this much later tradition?
Well, you know, we didn't really approach it cerebrally like that. That observation was made post us doing it and other groups doing it. For me, it was just like sampling was the way to go. And I didn't have any money, so I was just sampling the records that I could get, which were my father's records. So it wasn't really a conscious decision to be like, hey, man, we're going to make this, we're going to infuse jazz and hip hop and do it like that. It was really economic. An economic decision that was made, you know?
Yeah. We're speaking with Ishmael Butler, founding member of the group Diggable Planets. Their album came out in September of 93 and would win them a Grammy Award. This is the song Rebirth of Slick, Cool Like That.
Straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip hop record. He touched the kinks and sinks into the sounds. She frequents deep, fatter joints called undergrounds. Our funk zooms like you hit the Mary Jane. They flock to booms, man, boogie had to change. Who freaks the clips with mad amount percussion? Where kinky hair goes to unthought of dimensions? Why's it so fly? Cause hip hop kept some drama. When butterfly rocked the light blue suede Pumas. What? By the cut, we push it off the corner. How was the buzz entire hip-hop era? Was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi? Cause funk's made fat from right beneath my hood. The pooba of the styles like Miles and like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending junky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock? But I'm cool like that, I'm cool like that. I'm cool like that, I'm cool like that.
That is Diggable Planets, Rebirth of Slick, from their Grammy-winning 1993 album, Reachin', full title Reachin', A New Refutation of Time and Space. Ishmael Butler's on the line with us, founding member of Diggable Planets. And Ishmael, you said before that you weren't doing this in a cerebral way, and yet the album title is kind of cerebral, and so are a lot of the references that you drop in your lyrics. I mean, we heard you know, talking about Miles for a moment there, other jazz musicians, novelists, philosophers, all kind of mentioned right alongside the Kung Fu references and the Hawaii 5-0 stuff. So, I mean, it seems like there was some kind of, you know, brain power being used in the making of this record.
Yeah, but I mean, no more than what Snoop was using or anybody else, or even MC8, which you were playing from your last session. But, I mean, like, we all were in school. We all had to read books for certain classes and stuff like that. So it was just, I think that our approach to it might have been a little bit different to include that stuff because everybody kind of wasn't on that. But it was always interesting to me and influential to me in terms of the way that I was looking at life. So I had to throw it in there because it was true and real.
Mm-hmm. So we've been talking all week, Ishmael, about that year, 20 years ago, 1993. While you were waiting for this record to come out and while this record was in the process of hitting, what were you listening to?
I was listening to a lot of hip-hop, like Black Moon. I remember liking them a lot. And soundtracks were big then, too, because soundtracks, they wouldn't necessarily put the song from the soundtrack in the movie, but the soundtrack would be, like, chock full of all the latest groups with cool songs that were out and stuff like that. So that's what I was listening to.
Mm-hmm. So for an example, you know, we were hearing that Janet Jackson song from Poetic Justice earlier, which isn't in the film proper, but just over like the credits at the end. Was there something else from Poetic Justice that was on the soundtrack that you were listening to?
Yeah, there was a Stanley Clarke song on there that I really, really used to like. We'll be right back.
So that is Stanley Clarke with Justice's Groove from the nice. Poetic Justice soundtrack. Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
He was a great bass player and, you know, really kind of a big figure on the jazz and jazz fusion scenes back in like the 70s and 80s, but did a couple of soundtracks, I think.
Yeah, for that era, he was definitely involved in a lot of soundtracks and definitely scoring as well. He did a lot of scoring that people don't really know about, but great musician.
Ishmael Butler's with me on the line, the founding member of Diggable Planets and currently leading up the hip-hop group Shabazz Palaces, whose first album, Black Up, came out in 2011. But back to 93, what else were you listening? Did you mention Snoop Dogg before?
Yes, I did.
So
Snoop was, I just thought that album, that whole production style was really, really caught my imagination at that point in my life. And Doggy Style came out that year. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Dre's album, The Chronic, and all that stuff. But I really like that Doggy Style album, like Gin and Juice and all that stuff was nice, man.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky, yeah, this shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 a.m. and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got sisters in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 a.m. So what you wanna do? I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn off the lights and close the doors. But what?
We don't love them hoes.
Yeah. So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down while you look up for the bounce to this.
Gin and Juice from Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style 1993 release. Yes, it still sounds good to you, huh?
Yeah, it does.
Ishmael Butler with me on the line from Diggable Planets back in 93, these days with Shabazz Palaces. What's the status with you and Tendai? Are you guys working on something right now?
Yeah, we finished up the new Shabazz album as we speak, man, working on it every day, so we hope to get on the schedule once we finish it and come out, you know, soon next year, early next year, with it just sounding good, too.
And, you know, that's something to look forward to. I knew Tendai's dad, who was a great...
Oh, really?
Yeah, who was a great Zimbabwean thumb piano player, and he, of course, plays that instrument, too. So I am hoping you guys will stop off here in our New York studio the next time you're in town.
We'd love to, brother.
Ishmael Butler, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having me.
All that diamond dust, blowing up your hopes, flamboyant obstacles, oh, deals made too cold,
This is Shabazz Palaces. That's Ishmael Butler's current band with Tendai Mara Ire, and apparently working on a new record. So watch for that coming up soon. But coming up next on Soundcheck, live music from the Turkish-Canadian band Minor Empire.
Slave to networks, master plans, swags the brand, open a can. Chains off still, yeah, I never ran. I brag, I boast, I kill, I coast, I toast to cake and crime.
Yüksek yüksek tepelere ev kurmasınlar. Yüksek yüksek tepelere ev kurmasınlar.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today we're visited in the studio by the psychedelic Turkish-Canadian band called Minor Empire. Their debut album came out a few years ago. It's called Second Nature. And it strikes a cosmic balance between traditional and experimental sounds. This is the group's first time playing in New York. They're here with us in the Soundcheck studio to do a song called Bulbulum Altın Kafeste. Here is Minor Empire.
Altın kafeste.
That is the band Minor Empire, live here in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Bulbulum Altin Kafeste. Let me introduce you to the members of Minor Empire, which is built around the vocals of Ozgu Osman. Hi.
Yes, hi.
And the guitarist Ozan Boz. Ozan, welcome.
Hi.
With Michael Okapinti playing guitar, Chris Gartner on bass, Alan Hetherington playing the drum kit, Patrick Graham playing the frame drum. Do you call that a duff?
That one is... in this bandish. One, did you play bandish? He played bandish.
Which is, it's a frame drum.
It's large, a frame drum,
large
yeah.
frame drum. And Tamer Pinarbasha playing the kanun, which is the zither.
Zither,
instrument.
Yeah.
So you've got a mix of traditional and... Western instruments. What about that song?
Bulbulum Altın Kafeste?
Yeah.
Do you want to know the
easy
meaning?
Easy for you to say.
Title? Well, you said it pretty okay.
Is it a folk song that you've arranged?
It is a folk song we arranged, yes. It's a folk song from Balkan region. And it is talking about a songbird who is being kept in a golden cage.
Hmm.
Symbolism.
There's some sort of a symbolism going on.
Yeah.
In folk songs, usually women are symbolized using birds, various birds, and a songbird happens to be one of them.
So the idea of the bird in the cage, is this like kind of a commentary on the role of women traditionally
I think
in
it's
society?
About, it's an old song. I don't think it has to do with community and women, but it has to do with... romance, I think. It's
okay.
it's a man's infatuation for a woman. But she has this luxurious life, but she's not a happy songbird. She can't sing happy
right.
songs.
She can't fly away.
She can't right. fly away. She is right. in a beautiful cage.
So, Ozan, how did... the two of you were both born in Turkey, right?
Yes.
And now live in Toronto.
Yeah.
So this kind of collision of styles seems like maybe it happened organically, just as a result of...
Yes, it did, yeah. It did happen organically. Actually, Özgü and I were working on a different project, and Michael was involved in that project, too. And we were playing, like, completely Western... English lyrics, you know, trip hop kind of thing, and but we always wanted to integrate something from our, you know, background.
Mm-hmm.
But when and how, we were not kind of dictating anything. And when we start performing in Toronto, that Western thing, and people came up to us and say, "Hey, nice music, and where are you from? We're from Turkey." Why don't you have something from Turkey, too? And we thought
that... Yeah, but when people said that, did they think, like, belly dance music? I mean, people don't really know what Turkish music...
Exactly. They didn't know, yeah.
I think they didn't know what they were asking either, you know?
Yeah.
So that, and then we said, I think this is the time that to integrate that thing we've been thinking about, you know, for a long time.
Yeah. So the name Minor Empire, is that, like, a reference to... Asia Minor, the peninsula
yes.
that most of Turkey
yes.
is on. Okay.
Asia Minor, yeah, and the minor chords are very common. Very common
in
traditional.
Very common.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to be clear about this, when you say folk music, you're not talking about like the music of the Mevlevi dervishes or the court music. This is
no, it's pretty. It has no reference to any particular community.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to be maybe the common ground of all cultures across Turkey and common.
So you would hear it throughout the country.
I think you would hear it. These
and...
are very well known and loved songs, yeah.
So Turkey has been much in the news the past
yes.
couple of months.
Yes.
Do you still have families back there?
Yeah, all our families are there.
And so, you know, how...
We're worried. Mm-hmm. We're following very closely. I mean, we have a country, we have a very complicated country. We have people who are not happy with the way they're being governed.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a government who is choosing to ignore people's voices. So we don't know what's going to happen. People are going to keep talking. And it looks like government is going to keep ignoring. So the tension is increasing. We're just trying to do whatever we can from here, raise awareness and talk to our friends and, you know, send our family and our friends support.
Have you guys been able to play this music in Turkey yet?
No, not yet. We're looking forward to it.
Well, now might not exactly be the time to do that, but... Or who knows? It could be exactly the right time.
Turkey is a weird country in that sense. This might be the best time to actually just go and... I don't know. It's... Mm-hmm. We're all...
All right. Well, we're speaking with the members of the band Minor Empire. Their album Second Nature is out, but this next song, this is not on the record, right?
No,
It's not. Yeah.
So, Heyon Beşli is the name of it?
Yes.
Is this another folk song that you've arranged?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You want to play it for us?
Sure.
All right. Let's hear Özgür Özman and Ozan Boz and the rest of the band Minor Empire. Another live performance here in the Soundcheck studio of music with Turkish roots and some very, very modern sounds as well. Second Nature is the name of the record. Again, this song is not on it. You'll hear it now live in the Soundcheck studio. That is called Heyan Bejli. It is a Turkish folk song arranged and played live in the Soundcheck studio by the band Minor Empire. Vocalist Özgür Özman and guitarist Ozan Boz and the rest of the band, their album is called Second Nature. And I know you guys have a flight to catch. You got weekend gigs up in Alberta. So let me just say thank you both for bringing the band in and performing for us. It's been great having you.
It's been a pleasure.
Minor Empire, my guests on Soundcheck. And we wrap up our week-long series of the Summer of 93 as well. If you missed any of it, you can revisit our entire week of music from that summer 20 years ago on our website, soundcheck.org. On Monday, we hear the story of Harry Nilsson, music's forgotten man. But back in the day, songs like the Midnight Cowboy theme and Lime and the Coconut made him one of the most famous musicians on the planet. Also, jazz singer, songwriter, and pianist Lila Bialy joins us in the studio with her band to play live. Also next week, we want to know about an album that you missed whenever it came out, whether it was 1970 or last year, but discovered later and love now. Think about it over the weekend, and on Monday, tell us your pick at soundcheck.org. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop with Alex Kappelman and our interns Alex Martinez and Ian Petrarca. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. Stay cool, have a great weekend, and be with us on Monday for the next Soundcheck.